Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined by Joe Masato and Barry Trammell after the Thunder's 131-103 win over the San Antonio Spurs. We've seen the Spurs a lot recently.
This one was a little different.
Little different than the one right before. It was two games before the All-Star break when they were here again and beat the Thunder.
Without DeMar DeRozan.
Outplayed the Thunder by a lot in the fourth quarter. And tonight, the Thunder had a historically large win over the Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest win the Thunder has ever had against the Spurs, 28 points. And to add to the historic night, the Thunder had eight players score in double figures, which has never happened before in Thunder history.
Although they have. They've been trying to get there this season. They've had five times when they've had seven players score in double figures. So they were due. Right?
Well, if they had got the ball to Mike Muscala in the last minute, they might have had nine in double digits because he got to seven with about 2 minutes left, and then he didn't get another shot, didn't get the ball. It's hard to get the ball when Deontay Burton's on the court, but that's just the way it goes. Everybody knows that. So, but it was a great night. Everybody except Terrence Ferguson played well.
And Terrence Ferguson didn't play much.
And he didn't play much. He stiffened up. Stiff back, is that what they said?
Yeah. Low back stiffness.
And,
or
you know,
spasms or something.
And he didn't look good. I mean, I didn't even notice him on defense, but he always plays pretty good defense, so I don't worry about that. But he airballed a three-pointer. And then, of course, Lou Dort, the guy that's taken his time and his spot, was played spectacularly. So it was a case of everybody played well. Nerlens Noel and Steven Adams were ferocious inside. Chris Paul was, you know, Chris Paul. And I thought SGA played really good. I thought this was one of his better games recently. He was really, I thought, all around really good and efficient.
Yeah, I kept turning to Joe through the game and giving him a running total of his – rebounds. He finished the night with 13, but the Thunder, and some of those at the beginning were because he was grabbing his own misses, but he shot efficiently by the time the game ended, 8 of 14, and that was after a night when he was shooting really poorly last game, and was able to make up for that by just distributing the ball well, getting the ball to his open teammates, and he got a ton of assists in that game. And tonight he came back, led the team with 22 points. And on top of it, like I said, 13 rebounds, and like eight of those were in the first half or something like that.
Yeah, I think we're almost to the point where that 13, it's still a big number. He's averaging, I think, just over six a game. But it seems like that's going to be fairly common for him, you know, as his career, as he gets older, because I think we've touched on this in a story, podcast, whatever, that Billy encourages Shea to get that rebound and start the fast break, and they just get into the offense quicker. And we saw the ceiling, basically, that 20 rebound game at Minnesota, and, you know, 13
ceiling is the roof.
13 tonight, like, he's a big time rebounder. We have to talk about Lou Dort, though. We have to talk more about Lou Dort.
We definitely do. Real quick before we do, I wanted to look up Shea's first quarter rebounds because I feel like that they were...
It was like six, maybe. I don't know.
It was six in the first quarter. And after that, you're like, okay, that's about his average for the season. So this is going to get
Yeah, he was right at
fun.
It after one quarter.
Yeah. Lou Dort. He started off the game with a massive dunk. So, I mean, we were just talking about Shea's rebounds. Shea was on a fast break getting chased down by LaMarcus Aldridge. So, sure, he heard footsteps. Mm-hmm. He puts his layup too hard off the glass, grabs his own rebound, gets it to Lou Dort, who just throws down a monster of a dunk. One-handed, the crowd goes wild, and really kind of just like woke everyone in the arena up. Mm-hmm. Like 2 minutes into the game.
It was impressive because like it's fun to see, you know, he's not short, he's 6'3", but by NBA standards, with how powerfully built he is and, you know, not 6'6", like Shea or something like that, I thought the dunk, kind of, I was surprised by it. I was like, whoa, I didn't know he had quite that much power in him. And that was just like, that was just the beginning. He made both of his three-point attempts. He didn't miss, 6 of 6. So he was plus 36 on the plus minus. I mean, that's absurd.
That's insane.
Well, he's playing better consistently on offense than Terrence Ferguson or Andre Roberson even ever played, which is and now I'm not saying he's at their level defensively, but he's really good on defense. So it gives the Thunder a little bit of a five-man lineup that they've never really had, maybe going back to Tabo. Tabo had about a five-year run as that defensive stopper, and two of those 5 years he was pretty good on offense. But he's every day that goes by, he's more and more of a keeper, and you sit here and wonder, when are they going to, take that two-way stuff off of him? And because the clock's ticking, and at some point they've got to give him a contract, a full-time contract, to make him eligible for the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd imagine that they push it up as far as they possibly can. So he's had 21 games now. We don't know.
Yeah, tonight was 22.
Oh, sorry, 22 games. We don't know the actual number of days that he spent with the Thunder, which is he can have up to 45, but he hasn't been practicing with them. So I don't know if he's had like a practice here or there, or like a day that counted as basketball activities, but seems like they're going to push this out as long as they can, because they have no financial incentive to do otherwise. In fact, quite the opposite. They have a huge financial incentive to just keep paying him like a two-way up until they want him in the playoffs.
And that's really, I mean, that's the only thing holding him back, right, from that full contract, is just they're saving money by not doing it yet. There's really no reason for them to do it now. It gives them a little bit more flexibility. The Thunder still has an open roster spot, and it sure makes sense that, once those 45 days do come around, that he would fill that. And this is not publicly available information for these two-way players to see how long they've been up with the big league club, basically. So he's at 22 games. He's not practicing with the team. Don't know. It's probably not that much bigger than 22, number of days. So
probably exactly that or right around that is what I'd guess.
Yeah, so this is a thing that might not happen until right before the playoffs.
Yeah, they did bring Deonte Burton up last year in March was when he got signed to his standard NBA contract. And I feel like we were excited about a lot of the same things with Deonte Burton, except for he wasn't nearly as good defensively as Lu Dort is, as consistent defensively. And Lu Dort has shown that he has, at least recently, as much better decision making skills than Deonte's shown over the past. Barry, you look like you have
I just want to protect myself. I never once, not ever, have been excited about Deonte Burton, for crying out loud. Except in how many shots can you get off in a limited amount of time contest? Take him to the carnival. He'll get up 40 shots in 30 seconds. Man. No, Lu Dort, no. Deonte Burton on over 2 years has helped him a little bit. Lu Dort's helped him a lot in a short amount of time. I mean, he's a ball player. I don't know what's going to happen in his career. He may flame out by next year, but they need him. They got to have him right now, and he's producing.
And what he's doing now to me stands out even more, because it's not like they just found this guy and they can plug him in. Like, they really need him with Terrence Ferguson. He missed 8 games in January because of personal reasons. In the games he's come back, he continues to play good defense. That's why he's still in there, but he's been terrible offensively. He's made one shot in the last month. He was 0 of 2 tonight. He was the only player who had a negative plus minus. I mean, he just is still trying to find that groove. And meanwhile, Lu Dort's over here in the starting place that Terrence Ferguson used to occupy, and he's playing very well.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, we'll see what happens with their careers, but at this point, in order for really good players to go undrafted, every team has to miss on them, right? And right now, those two guys that I'm sure at least some people who were considering, you know, maybe bringing in as a draft and stash and or something along those lines, are kicking themselves for not drafting Lu Dort or Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah, I mean, those are Kendrick Nunn's a bigger story nationally, I think, just with what he's put up scoring wise. But Dort is, I think he's catching some people's eyes with what he's doing, especially defensively. Now the offense, you'll take that whenever it comes. Like today was a little bit of an outlier, but yeah, I've said that before. Like after he went 5 of 6 from three or whatever a few weeks ago, so he's. The shot looks good, too. Like, you know, it's not like you're sort of, like, cringing when he puts up one of those threes. Like, sometimes he takes them
there
when...
There was some at the beginning of the season when you were
when
like...
When he took contested ones, too.
No. Like, no.
And today he made... there was one I thought he was going to put up, and he made an extra pass to Gallinari, and Gallinari made the three, and I was like, oh, that's a little bit of evolution from him.
Yeah, no, for sure. He's making sure that he's taking those open ones. Billy Donovan consistently says, like, decision-making is the hardest thing for young players, and Lu Dort has certainly shown development in that category this season.
He's even showing good decision-making on defense, because, like, tonight, my favorite play by Dort was he's on the other side of the court, and Adams is battling LaMarcus Aldridge on the baseline, I'd say 10 feet from the basket, and Aldridge is sitting there doing what Aldridge does, which is not get in a hurry, and he's sort of trying to back down Adams or just really position himself for one of those turnarounds, which whatever it was, and Dort sort of sniffed it out, and Dort just made a beeline down the baseline, just ran around and stole the ball off a bounce from Aldridge.
That was insane. So, and then kept it in bounds, too.
Yeah, that's right.
He tiptoed around the line and threw it to Shea.
Yeah. So that was he's getting more intuitive on defense. Did the Thunder have a second round pick last summer?
No.
So they went Baisley or the Clark Baisley trade, and then they didn't have any
and
more
that
picks.
Was it. I'm pretty
well,
sure.
Then they're a little bit off the hook on Dort.
Right, because you wouldn't have taken him one.
No, probably not. Should have. Well, I mean, it looks like, but
yeah.
But,
well, that's the thing too. He was projected to go for late first round.
Yeah, I wonder what happened. Anybody know? Well, how'd he fall so far?
I'm assuming it's his shot.
And his size, maybe.
Yeah.
Just being undersized to play. Like, he's not a point guard, so you don't see many 6'3 shooting guards.
Well, but my point is, he wasn't 6'7 in March and then fell to 6'3 in June.
Yeah.
I mean, why weren't people excited about him early and then drop off? But that's the way it goes, you know. Sometimes the draft's not a science.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an extremely good find for the Thunder at a very good time. And I don't know, it's like we keep talking about this guy, and at this point, it's a matter of time, it seems like, before he has a full-time contract.
Yeah. Of course we had to talk about Dort for a good chunk of the podcast.
It wouldn't be the Thunder Buddies podcast without Dort talk.
Not at all. So Dort was also part of that 16-0 run in the second quarter, which is really where the Thunder essentially took the game and continued in that trend. And it was a funny lineup. It was Dort. So Billy Donovan called a timeout, and then he subbed in Dort, Gallo, and Nerlens Noel to go along with Shea and Dennis for most of it.
I think Shooter, yeah.
So not the starting lineup and not the three guard lineup that we're used to having such good net rating.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I mean, they were just so good on both ends. Nerlens Noel was not letting anything get through. It was like he just built an invisible fence around the opposing rim.
He was fantastic. Like he had five blocks. So his season high is six blocks. He had five blocks in the first half. He didn't have a block in the second half, but he twice blocked Derek White. He got DeMar DeRozan, Lonnie Walker. And like, it's not like he barely tipped the ball. Like, some of these were very emphatic blocks. And it's kind of what the Thunder has with its center rotation, I think, works really well. Like, you've got Adams, who has his strengths, one of which is strength and guarding those those big guys. And then Noel is, especially as like a help side defender, like, you know, he might not be the best when a guy is backing him down, but if someone's driving into the lane and throwing up a layup or a floater, like, his timing is really, really good.
There are so many, even on top of those five blocks, which is like an insane amount, where he didn't necessarily get the block, but he was there in case the ball made it to him, you know? Like, it's hard to put into perspective how much of an influence he was during that stretch.
You know what's cool about Nerlens Noel? I don't think you've done this. We've been talking about him, what, 60 seconds, 75 seconds, 90 seconds? I haven't once mentioned he's 5 for 5.
Yeah, yeah.
10 points, nope. Including a cool drive and sort of a left-handed scoop shot almost to score over Aldridge or somebody tall. So, you know, he's a nice little offensive player today. He had one rebound the whole dang game. And nobody cares. You know, 6'10 center and has one rebound in 16 minutes. Nobody cares because his rim protection and even his offense was so good tonight.
Yeah, jumping so much at the shot. Just, that's fine. You don't have to jump again.
Yeah, and it was the rim protection was great, but just in general, the Thunder owned the paint. They outscored the Spurs 74-42 in the paint. I think we've got maybe some updated numbers on that it was even more lopsided than we think, but
I wrote down what you told us, Barry. So Barry is
we've got our own calculations here at the Oklahoman.
He the detail that he takes game notes is exceptional, and so he was able to calculate points in the paint, including free throws that came off of fouls in the paint. And according to Barry, it's 94-55. Thunder outscored
94 paint points. It seems kooky to me to talk about paint points but don't count foul shots. So I do count foul shots that come in the paint. So 94 is a ton of paint points. And you go 94 paint points and then make 10 of 22 three-point shots. This might have been the best offensive game of the year. Probably was, don't you think? I mean, they shoot 57.5% overall, 45.5% from three-point range, 21 of 24 free throws. The only thing they didn't do much of was second chance points were minimal. But here's the deal. When you miss a lot of shots and the other team makes a lot of shots, you're going to win the second chance battle, and San Antonio did. But, you know, Billy was talking about that. That was the one thing he didn't like tonight, was too many rebounds for San Antonio. But that's the nature of the shooting. So I thought this Thunder was just excellent on offense. And they didn't do a whole lot of three-point gunning. They got the ball inside, and then it moved back outside. They did it with the pass, and they did it with Chris Paul's probing. And Gilgeous Alexander also. I thought he played one of his better floor games. He only had 4 assists. But I thought he was really good at just my impression was he played more point guard tonight than usual. Did anybody else feel that way or not? Just an impression that hit me. I don't have anything to back that up, but it just struck me that way. So I thought he was really good.
Well, and the guy who we've barely talked about now is a guy who almost got a triple-double, which shows you how balanced this scoring effort was. But Chris Paul didn't play, what, the last, like, 5 minutes or so?
Yeah, he finished with 28 minutes total.
And he had 12 points, 10 assists, and 9 rebounds. So after the game, Barry broke the news to him that he was a rebound short of a triple-double. And that was when I think both of us, you really got punched in the face with the, like, oh, things have changed.
Yeah. I feel bad about this because the last 3 years especially, we've celebrated what we saw, and we should have. Russell Westbrook was unbelievable, historic, all those things. But he also kept a running calculator in his head, or either had, you know, somebody sending smoke signals from the sideline on his stats. He knew exactly what he had and what he needed. And
that's not a value judgment. It's just
no, it's just the way it is. Yeah, I mean, I've played basketball on the sand lot with guys do that. And
you played in the sand?
Well, on the asphalt. Murray Evans, actually. I'll tell you that story sometime. He keeps stats while he's playing pickup basketball. But anyway, Westbrook does that. And frankly, you know, the rotations when it came to Westbrook by Billy Donovan were sort of optional. You know, Billy just sort of suggested it from time to time. And then Westbrook would decide whether he's going to come in or go out. And so much of that was based, most of it was based on just, you know, how you're feeling and how's the game. But there were a lot of times when decisions were made based on the stats.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the 2020 game. Yeah. Russ decided that he's not coming out.
Exactly. There was a lot of that. Let's just be honest. And there was none of that tonight. I think Billy and Chris Paul were telling the truth when
that
they said
they
had no idea. Chris, I don't really – I mean, if he really knew that it was a 29-10 game, he's a good actor. Of course, he is a good actor. We've seen him on the State Farm commercials.
But the best part was when you said you were close to a triple-double. He said, tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because it was 10.
What did it have?
And then he was one shy, but the key was he was 10-8-8 with 5.5 minutes left in the third quarter, which means you're automatically going to get it at that point. But then he only played, I think, 2.5 minutes the rest of the quarter, and then he played 3.5 minutes of the fourth quarter, something like that. And he really, I don't think he cared. I looked it up. Did he have 18? I think he's got 18 career triple doubles, which was, you know, about a 2 months work, 2 months worth for Westbrook the last 3 years. But I really don't think he cared. And it just shows you, it's just another sign of how different things are. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they're better, not saying they're worse, not saying anything. It's just different.
Well, and it was always so fun when Russell knew that he had a triple double. You could see, like, he'd celebrate it. The fans would celebrate it. It was this huge thing. But, like, Barry, like you wrote, if you haven't read Barry's column, definitely go read it. Obviously, Chris didn't hit it. But, like, it's become a thing where it's like, all right, that's not what we care about anymore. And it's not, like, it was really great that we cared when he was setting all these historical marks. And, like, also great now that Chris Paul doesn't seem to care at all, and now the Thunder's making history with how balanced the scoring is.
It was really funny too after the game, like in that same exchange, he was like, "Billy, he won't let me be great." Like it was really funny. Like he blamed not getting the triple double on Billy, right. But obviously it was a joke.
He found out it was one rebound short, and he said, "That's on Billy."
Yeah. Which, like, again, tells you that he really didn't know, or else that the joke wouldn't have felt as sincere. Like, it was very funny, I thought.
Yeah.
So it was a fun night at the ballpark. I thought it was a very fun night at the ballpark. You know, a guy that played well, and actually he's played pretty well. He played well the other night, too. Pretty good. Is a guy we haven't talked a lot about, and that's Abdel Nader. He's done okay as the backup power forward in the with Baisley out. He certainly spaces the floor. You know, I made a funny line. You know, he did something early in the game. He made a bad play or something. And the guy sitting on the other side of me from you, Kimmy Schmidt, was Clay. And I told Clay, I said, you know, the good thing about Lou Dort is he doesn't know that he's Lou Dort. You know what the bad thing about Abdel Nader is? He doesn't know that he's Abdel Nader. But he actually played pretty well tonight. He sank a couple threes. He went to the basket when it was still a decent game and scored over Aldridge in the paint. And he held up defensively tonight. So, you know, I was pretty I was pretty encouraged by what I've seen out of Nader post All-Star break. I thought he played okay against Denver also.
Yeah, and when Gallinari's out, you know, when we out, not out, out, but when Gallinari's out of the game and Terrence Ferguson isn't shooting well, or as the case was tonight, had back spasms and wasn't going to return, then the Thunder really doesn't have anyone who can space the floor except for Abdul Nader with that second unit.
Yeah, I think even when Bazley comes back, now playoff rotations are going to be totally different, but at least regular season wise, I kind of think they need Nader in there just as another threat from the outside. You know, Bazley is still trying to work his way toward that, but Nader right now is a better shooter.
I guess Mike Muscala is the other guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of, and I wanted to bring that up because, like, Nader has played almost all of those backup 4 minutes, almost all the minutes Bazley's been getting, or Bazley was getting. I'm kind of surprised Muscala hasn't gotten some of those backup 4 minutes because, you know, we've said all along he's more of a four than a five anyway, and he's a really good shooter.
Yeah, and we saw him fill in when Gallo was injured more earlier in the season. He filled in for some of those minutes as Bazley moved up into the starting unit. But, yeah, I don't know. I think for some reason Billy Donovan really thinks of him as a stretch five and has been playing him like that. And he's given him Billy has given Mike a lot of praise for being ready whenever he's called upon and all of that. But I don't know. I guess defensively, Abdul Nader is definitely quicker than Mike Muscala.
Yeah, Nader's defensive issues aren't as glaring as I thought they'd be. Like he hangs in there pretty well
too than last year.
Abdul Nader. Sometimes we lump in all those guys from Iowa State the same, or at least I do. Abdul Nader is an NBA player. Deontay Burton really isn't, but Abdul Nader is. I mean, if the Thunder, for some reason, you know, need to trade him or cut him, whatever the case may be, don't re-sign him, somebody's going to want Abdul Nader. I mean, this is a guy that spent a couple of years in Boston and was not a major rotation player. He also wasn't at the end of the bench. They don't screw around in Boston either. It's not Atlanta or Sacramento or someplace. I mean, they know what they're doing in Boston, and they know what they're doing in Oklahoma City, and he's helped two straight franchises. So he's a legitimate NBA player. Now, you don't want to play him 20 minutes a game. You could have some problems. But if he's playing 10, 12 minutes a game or filling in when somebody's hurt, you know, you can do a lot worse.
And he's definitely developed since Boston, too, because he was playing a lot of G League minutes when he was out there. And the Thunder's done a good job of getting him a balance last year, coming back from injury last year, and then getting him a balance of playing with the Blue, who's kind of up and down last year, kind of like Justin Patton was at the beginning of this year. And then this year, they've really needed him, especially when injuries have shortened their depth.
Yeah. Just to get back to one thing we touched on at the beginning, as far as like maybe their most efficient game, I looked it up. Field goal percentage-wise, if you just go by that, it was their third best game. They shot 61% again at Orlando in late January, and they shot 58.1% home against the Hawks 2 days after that. So this is third. And then point total-wise, 131 is their second highest regulation. They scored 140 against Atlanta in that blowout. So we were spot on. Yeah. One of the best offensive nights of the year.
And this is a better team than Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
It's still strange to see the Spurs at 24-32.
Yeah.
Especially if you remember the glory days of, I mean, you can go back 20 years, but, I mean, the Thunder's had three fantastic series against the Spurs. They've won two of them, remarkably, six-game series. But just to see where they're at, you know, it's a little bit sad because they're in there fighting and they still got two all-star type caliber players, but it's just not – doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And I don't know what their future holds. I've always been a Spur fan, a Popovich fan, all those things. So I don't know what's going to be in the future for the Spurs, but it's a little disconcerting because it's not a bright outlook.
And it's weird having them not be, like you said, weird, not be a shoo-in for the playoffs, because I just looked it up. I knew it had been a long time since they last missed the playoffs. It's been since 97.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With Tim Duncan Lottery. Yeah, and I mean, where they are now is because of the Kawhi Leonard deal. I mean, if Greg Popovich wasn't their coach, they probably could have got a better package than DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl. I mean, they wanted to, you know, as Pop is in toward the end of his career, they still wanted to get some quality players back before going into a full rebuild. But you look at what, like, the Thunder got for Paul George, Shea, and all those draft picks and Gallinari, and, you know, the Spurs didn't get close to that for Kawhi Leonard.
Wouldn't you like to be on the inside and know if the Spurs tried to get Pascal Siakam? And if so, what was that discussion like? Or maybe, I don't know. But
he would have made this.
Think about how
better.
The difference if they got Siakam. You know, provided he progresses. I mean, that trade is now a year and two-thirds old. So Siakam in that time has turned into a really good player and then a superstar. So, you know, Toronto is to be commended. But it's not like San Antonio has stunted the growth of developing players. They've been great at it. So, the similarity with the George trade is remarkable because they're similar players. Kawhi's probably considered a better player than Paul George. Not probably, he is. And in the same contract situation.
But the big difference is that Kawhi was also a factor in the Paul George.
Yeah, well,
trade.
And Kawhi was.
And he was hurt.
And he was pouting. And he pouting and wanted out and sort of hurt the bargaining chip. Nobody knew anything about Paul George. So the Thunder did have an advantage there.
Yeah, it definitely is weird. 24-32. And the Pelicans won tonight. They actually moved half a game ahead of the Spurs. So now the Spurs are in 11th place in the West. So, I mean, they're still in that race for the 8th seed, but I don't know. I'd probably put them behind the Blazers and the Pelicans as far as catching the Grizzlies.
It's crazy. All right. Anything else you guys want to add before we wrap it up?
I think that does it. I think we mentioned Lou Dort's name enough.
You don't want to get
Deontay
in
Burton's
a couple more. You don't want to give us a Timberwolves update?
They lost tonight. Surprise, surprise.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. Like it, love it, subscribe, share it with your friends, your family, your neighbors, your pets. And we will see you on Tuesday after the Chicago game.